Welcome to the High Tech Hunting Podcast with your host, Grant Utley.
We'll dive right into it. I know I got a lot of topics, and I'm sure Ryan would does too. So, what day did you get back from Illinois?
Actually, my trip got canceled at the last minute. I had a septic system issue, and I'm actually leaving after this podcast. So I'm going this week instead.
Okay. You just going down there to scout, put cameras out, stands, all that stuff?
Yeah, mainly put cameras out.
Gotcha. Yeah, we'll dive into it. I guess let me pull up my topics here.
What part of Illinois is it?
West Central.
Gotcha.
Just west of Springfield.
Gotcha.
You from North Central?
North or Northeast.
Okay.
I'm originally from Northeast Illinois.
But yeah, I tried to come up with some unique questions to try to pick your brain a little bit on stuff. And
try to stump me?
Yeah, we'll see. So what was the first year you killed a 200? You killed four, correct?
Yeah, 99. Probably before you guys were born.
That was the year I was born, actually.
I was born in 95, so I was four at least.
Gotcha.
What... was that before trail cameras? What year did trail cameras really become a thing?
It was definitely before trail cameras. I take that back because there were some different variations that you could call, you know, a trail camera. They had some that were like connected with a line. You'd put it across the trail, and when a animal busted through the line, it tripped the camera and took a picture. But I mean, the actual, I don't even know what you actually call it, the first trail camera, but yeah, it definitely was before I was using cameras, put it that way.
So being that it was before you're using cameras, anything like that, talking about that specific deer, was that a deer you had history with, or was it just one of those that just showed up and you saw him for the first time the day you shot him?
No, it was a deer that I'd hunted, I don't know, multiple seasons. You know, it wasn't like I set out to kill a 200 inch deer. Just by the time I killed him, he was 200. he was just a giant 9 point. Couple years before that, and I'd missed him once, and I'm guessing he was probably, you know, 6 or 7 by the time I killed him. But that year that I killed him, he just blew up that summer.
What age was that? Was he going from 5 to 6, or what was that gap?
Like I said, I'm guessing it was in that 6 to 7 year old range. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. One of your questions today was what age gap you think deer take the biggest jump, if it's like 5 to 6 or 4 to 5, or what you think that year is.
I've seen it both. I've seen it between 4 and 5 and between 5 and 6. I think from a basic typical, you know, standpoint, I think they have their biggest typical racks between that 4 and 5, and then they normally start throwing trash after that. But it all really kind of depends on the deer. But I think there's normally one season when they make a really big jump. Mm-hmm. You know, anywhere from 30 to 50, 60 inches. I don't think that happens more than once, you know.
And then they get to a certain age where they start actually declining the older they get.
Yeah, I've always thought that, and I've kind of seen that too. But a good friend of mine that lives down in Texas, he's killing deer that are 7, 8, 9. He's killed a couple that were 10 years old, and a lot of those deer didn't have their biggest racks until they were way up in age, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. So it could be relative. It could be because of the area, but hard to say. But I don't necessarily believe that, which I used to believe, you know, once they got to a certain age, they went down, but I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. But how often do you get to see an 8 or 9 or 10 year old deer, you know? Right. So it's really hard to say.
Right. Especially on public land. Yeah. What year? So you killed your first 200 in 1999. When was the next one?
99, then 2001, 2003. And then The last one, I think, was in 2014.
How was, like...
2016, I'm sorry.
How was... Do you still, whenever you try to fight a 200, do you still use the same philosophies as you did back then?
No, things have changed a lot, you know, a lot since it used to be back then. You know, you could drive the roads and find a big deer in the summer and get permission to hunt them. And I mean, that's just not the case anymore. Now you're trying to grow them and, you know, letting deer walk, hoping that they get to the point where they could get to be that big, and, you know, the food plots and monitoring them. And, you know, I still travel as much as I used to, but it's, yeah, it seems like it's changed drastically over the last 20 years when it comes to, you know, finding a big deer and trying to kill them.
How many different states are you, do you have leases spread out across?
I really don't lease a bunch. I've got friends in different states that I've hunted with for, you know, over 20 years now, but typically I hunt, obviously, Ohio, because I live in Ohio, Kansas and Illinois every year. I didn't draw a Kansas tag this year. That's getting to be a deal where it seems like every 2 to 3 years you draw a tag, and it used to be every year. Mm-hmm. I'm hunting Texas this year, hunting Kentucky, and probably Alberta. I like to get up to Canada every fall if I can, if I got a big deer to chase up there. So, yeah.
That's cool. What part of Kentucky? We're in Western Kentucky.
This is down in Lexington.
Okay, so you're more central. Gotcha.
Yep.
No, that's interesting you mentioned that, because I actually – this was my first year putting in for a Kansas tag, and I got it. So I'm guessing the next 2 or 3 years, I'm going to have to skip out on if
yeah
the trend.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that tag next year.
Yeah.
What have you seen change over the years as far as managing deer and, you know, food plots and everything? I know, like, I'm a big waterfowl hunter as well, and it seems like there's more and more places that have flooded corn and all this kind of stuff. And it seems like there's more and more food plots and people managing herds and all that. How has that progressed since you've been deer hunting?
It's changed, you know, 100-fold. I mean, there was none of that stuff going on back in the day when I first started. And now, I mean, everybody's micromanaging every little piece of cover they can, trying to make their property as good as it can be. So, I mean, you know, from a habitat standpoint, I think things are, you know, better than they've ever been, you know. I actually kind of believe, though, that things have gone a little too far. Just because, I mean, I talk to hundreds of guys every year because of the Moon Guide, and people are always texting me or emailing me, calling me, trying to, you know, hey, can you help me out with this deer? Can you look at my property? Can it, you know, just more of a consulting, from a consulting standpoint. And it seems like, to me anyway, and I mean, I've hunted everywhere between Ohio and Alberta, it's almost like guys have taken it to the extreme where they're creating these magnificent properties that are, you know, food plots and bedding areas and watering stations. And I mean, everything in there, you're actually creating this habitat that's holding 98% of your deer herd, but it's the 98% you don't want to kill. And their neighbors are killing the bigger deer. And it's because you're making these properties so perfect for the deer. And you know, the 2% that we all want to kill don't want to be around the rest of those deer all year long. So they're staying on the outskirts of these properties, and their neighbors are killing the big ones. And it's almost like we've gone too far with it, that, you know, I'm almost, you know, that train of thought where instead of having all this food and a little bit of cover, it really needs to be the opposite. You know, if you don't have better cover than your neighbor, you're not going to hold the biggest mature deer in the area. So, you know, I'm actually going to start doing some consulting this next year, but I'm, you know, call me old school, whatever you want. But I think that all the habitat management and consulting to this point with food plots and all this has gone way out of control and gone way too far to that extreme where, like I said, you're not holding the deer that you want to kill. You're holding the rest of them. And, you know, I firmly believe that guys should really focus on more better cover, you know, and not so much food, because it's almost counterproductive, it seems like.
So would you say when you're looking for a new piece of property, would you try to find a neighborhood where maybe your neighbors aren't as serious about land management rather than getting a bunch of neighbors that are? Will you take the risk of, you know, maybe your neighbors aren't as serious, but they're going to shoot those 3.5-year-old studs during gun season, where as if you're in a neighborhood where everyone is serious about land management, it's going to be harder to keep those bigger deer on your property all year?
You know, I don't really get out like I used to and look for deer and find new places to hunt. I mean, I've got, you know, the places that I hunt every year that I've been hunting for the last 20 years, and I know them, you know, intimately, know where I need to be on those properties at any given time of the year to have my best luck. But if I was going to be going out and looking for a property or looking for big deer, my number one consideration is being somewhere close to some type of sanctuary where deer can get away from all hunting pressure. Yeah, that would be the number one thing I'd be looking for.
What that brings up a good point, because I was going to ask you, what was like the smallest tract of property that you ever killed a booner on? Because everyone thinks you need this 400, 500 acre tract where you could get a 10 acre tract. And if it's the right funnel in the right area, you could consistently kill big deer out of it.
Well, you know, there's two trains of thought with that. One, if you're trying to manage your property and grow big deer, obviously the more property you have, the better, because it's so difficult to keep and hold deer on a property. But I've always thought that I would rather have the right 5 acres than the wrong 500. And I've killed a handful of my biggest bucks on very small tracks. My own home farm is only 6 acres, and we shot 270-inch deer off the 6 acres last year. And I had a 200-inch deer that I was hunting that got away and unfortunately got killed not too far off my farm. But I'm all about having – it's more to me about location than size. You know, I want to have it in the right spot. And like I said, I'd rather have that right 5 acres than, you know, the wrong 500. So –
what makes that 6 acre so special? Is it like a transition between two properties or like a big funnel, or what makes it so killer?
Close to a sanctuary.
That makes sense. And when you're, you know, say we're in November, you know, obviously when we're looking at mature deer, we're looking at weather and wind direction and all that stuff. But say it's in November and you know your target buck's in between does going off your cameras, are you a little bit more aggressive and you don't really pay attention as much to the wind? Like, are you going to hunt, if you know that buck's going to be cruising on the downwind side of a bedding area at 1 in the afternoon in November, but it's necessarily not the right wind direction for your stand, are you still going to push it in there?
You know, my luck changed drastically on killing big deer consistently. When I quit hunting winds that were good for me and I start hunting winds that's good for the buck I'm after. You know, because if you think about it, a buck that's managed to live 4, 5, 6 years, he survived because of his nose, you know, and that deer trusts his nose above everything else. So if you think about it, why not use his best defense against him and just turn the tables? What's going to make that deer feel more comfortable and safer to get up out of his bed before dark than a win in his favor? So just give him the win. But in doing that, I create a scenario where I'm making it more difficult on myself, because most of my stands where I'm set up, I'm really splitting hairs on wind direction, you know, and I'm really relying on being super clean, you know, ozonics, using 2 or 3 different kinds of attractants, cover scents. I never put all my eggs in one basket with one thing when it comes to scent. You know, I do as many different things as I can, because you never know with the wind swirling if your ozonics is going to, you know, catch that wind swirl, or, you know, having, you know, scent in a scrape or different things. So I'm constantly using as many different things as I can to beat a buck's nose, just because I'm normally set up to where I'm giving him the wind. So.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to figure out how extreme you go to on your scent control. Cause I don't, do you use ozonics, Ryan?
I don't.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I spray down, but I never hear, you know, if you've had certain instances where a big deer has gotten downwind of you and hasn't detected you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm carrying enough shit with me when I go in a tree with all my hunting gear, my camera gear. If something doesn't work, I'm not going to be taking it. You know, it's as simple as that. So yeah, I sometimes when I'm in a real situation where I know that wind is really borderline, I'll take two of them.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe in it that much.
You brought up, you know, getting mature deer out of their beds, and I'll bring up, you know, the moon guy and the red moon, if you want to dive into the actual science behind that and why there are certain days of the month where mature deer get up earlier than usual and how to hunt the red moon.
Mm-hmm. I think outside of the rut, outside of breeding season, and outside of the fact that deer have got to, you know, eat and drink every day, you have a few factors that are going to increase activity during daylight for a mature deer. Yeah, you know, I think your does and immature bucks and fawns, all those deer are going to be moving pretty much same time in the morning and evening every day, regardless. When we're talking about hunting an old mature buck, I think there's just a few things that are going to get that deer up before dark, because he's learned that when he gets up and moves before dark, it's not safe. You know, they just don't do it every day. Otherwise, they wouldn't get to be 5, 6, 7 years old. And to me, like I just mentioned, the first thing I'm looking at is wind direction. You know, I want a wind that's good for the buck that I'm after, so he feels comfortable enough and safe enough to get up out of his bed before dark and move. Now, after that, I think there's two main things that are going to get that buck up and moving. One is the moon and one is the weather. We all know there's days every season that the weather is just perfect and you need to be in your stand, no matter what the moon's doing. You know, that when they get that first cold front or you get a good high pressure system, I mean, everybody knows those days where the weather's perfect and deer are going to be moving and you need to be in your stand. And on those days, the weather trumps everything. I mean, you need to be hunting. In the last 45 years I've spent deer hunting, there are days when the moon trumps the weather. I've seen it. I killed my biggest buck today, 2 hours before dark, early November in Kansas, 85 degrees out, was no reason for that deer to be up moving. And I've seen it more than once on days like that where high winds or high temperatures should be suppressing activity. And on those nights when that red moon is peaking, man, that I'm telling you, that moon trumps the weather. You know, if you're solely going off the wind and good weather patterns, you know, you might only get a handful of days every year where the weather is perfect for hunting. You know, what are you doing on those other days? You know, are you just sitting at home? Are you not hunting? I mean, I hunt almost every day. And I'm here to tell you, man, after 45 seasons, I promise you, there are days when that moon is going to trump everything. And the, you know, if you want to put it in a nutshell, there's a handful of days each month where the overhead or underfoot moon peaks at prime time when deer want to move anyway. It's just a natural instinctive push. You know, deer can sense a storm coming in. They can sense barometric pressure rising, and they can sense the gravitational pull of the moon. I mean, you can't tell me that something that's so powerful that it moves the largest mass on our planet, the oceans, twice a day. You can't tell me that deer don't trigger off that. You know, you talk to anybody that's serious about fishing, especially saltwater guys, they've been following the moon forever because that's what triggers the tides. And there are a handful of days each month when that overhead or underfoot moon peaks right at prime time, right in that little window when deer want to move anyway. So you got a big mature buck laying there in his bed. He wants to get up and feed, but everything's telling him to stay put because that's the safest thing for him to do. But you get a night where all of a sudden you got a wind blowing right back in his bedding area from the direction he wants to go, his favorite food source. And you combine that with a moon that's peaking right at prime time. It's just that extra little push. You know, we're not talking about him traveling miles out of his way. We're talking about just getting up a few minutes early to go that, you know, 100, 200 yards to his food source. It's just a natural instinctive push to get him up moving just a little bit earlier. And it's the same thing when you get a good weather pattern, you know, and they feel comfortable. He's got a good wind. All of a sudden it's dropped 15 or 20 degrees from yesterday. And he just has that urge to get up and move early. It's the same thing. You know, there's nights where the weather is going to trump everything. There's nights when the moon's going to trump everything. And you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not looking at everything. You know, it's never one thing, never. You know, you've got to put as many tools in your arsenal to stack the deck in your favor. And man, I've been doing this for 30 years now, you know, paying attention to the wind, paying attention to the weather, paying attention to the moon. Some days it's one thing, some days it's the other. On those really special days when you got the perfect wind, the perfect moon, and a perfect weather, I mean, that's the perfect storm. And that's when shit gets bloody and big deer die. And you can follow it every year on social media. You know, when you see a bunch of guys knocking down giants, and you go back and you look, what was the weather doing? What was the moon doing? And that's why we offer a free version of the moon guide that shows all the historical data, because that is usually the light bulb moment for a guy that's, you know, a little hesitant about the moon, thinks there might be something to it, but he's never really, you know, learned enough about it to really understand it. And you go back in that moon guide and you start comparing, you know, when I got my daylight pictures of this buck that never moved in, you know, daylight, first daylight picture, or when I've killed my biggest deer, and you start comparing those dates and times to the historical data in the moon guide. And like I said, that's usually a light bulb moment for guys when they start seeing that shit lined up and they never paid attention to it before. I mean, it's not 100%, you know, nothing ever is, but it's scary how accurate that can be sometimes. And I mean, in the last 10 years, I've talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of guys that have killed their biggest bucks ever paying attention to the moon. It's just another tool, man. You can never stop learning. You know, once you think you got it figured out, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice by not keeping an open mind. I mean, I'm 58 years old and I'm still learning stuff every year from other guys that hunt and are successful. But if you look at guys that are consistently successful, they've been able to develop a system that works for them. And that's been my system. And I'd love to say and take credit for it that I came up with all of it, but it's really just been taking bits and pieces from different guys that have been really successful and kind of combining it all into one system. Like I said, where I'm following the wind first and then either the moon or the weather, you know, whenever one of those things are really peaking to increase activity. And other than that, you know, I'm not going into my kill spots unless I've got at least two of those factors lined up on a given night, or if a big deer is making a mistake in daylight on my camera, you know, then I'm going to dive in. That's when you got to be aggressive and jump into your stand when he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing in daylight. But I probably went way beyond what your question was.
That was good. I think we were literally just talking about this. Ryan's deer, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Was it the first weekend in November?
It was November 12th, I believe. Yeah, November 12th. It was a Sunday. The biggest deer I've killed. It was during gun season. Had this deer on camera a whole bunch. He was daylighting a bunch. Always, of course, when I was at work. One day, you know, I sat in one tree stand. He's over here. One day I got in the stand that afternoon at 1:30. He was there at 1:04. Like the whole nine yards, cat and mouse. Just, I mean, it was a crazy story. My wife and I went to church Sunday morning, got done with church. She wanted to go out to eat. So we went out to eat for lunch, got home, and it's right there, 12:45, 1 o'clock. And I hunt probably 5 minutes from my house, and it was 75 degrees and just still, and just not a good deer hunting day. And I thought, you know, it'd be a good day to just take the time, spend the time at home. Got a young family, everything, so I can hunt that next cold front. But I thought, you know what? If I do that, he's going to show up. And with trail cameras now, it's a good thing and a bad thing, because they tell you when they are there, even when you're not. So I got in the stand, And I got in and I said, man, I'm not even going to see anything. This is going to be a terrible afternoon. I'm sweating already coming in. And I was in the stand for maybe an hour or so. Doe comes out. She just walks by me. And then all of a sudden she comes running right back. And here he comes, the deer I'd been hunting. I mean, middle of the day, pretty much hot.
When was it? Good.
It was November 12th of 23.
It had to have been Red Moon Day. I mean, that's the only way.
I've never really kept up with the moon. I've tried to learn more and more about it, but exactly what you just described has been me, to where I've tinkered with it a little bit, but I've never really jumped in on it.
What, where were you at?
Right here in Western Kentucky.
Kentucky. And you said November 12th of 23.
Yep.
Middle of the day, right?
Yeah, it was probably 2:30.
So the moon times was a new moon, and it was peaking in the middle of the night at midnight and 11:35 in the middle of the day. So if you would have been looking at the moon guide that day, it would have told you that you needed to be hunting from 10 to 2 midday back into cover instead of your field edges and food sources, because the deer were going to be up moving in the middle of the day. And but you said it was gun season, right?
It was. It was.
Yeah.
That's a whole different
topic. I don't know how much
comes in peak rut here. I don't know how it is Ohio, but.
Yeah. That's you know, when it comes to the rut, I'm going to be honest. You know, I struggled in November for a long time because I was typically hunting a specific deer. You never know what they're going to be doing in November. And, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what phase of the rut is, you know, are they seeking? Are they searching? Are they chasing? Are they locked down? You know, what are they doing? When I threw all that out the window and I just strictly focused on the peak activity times each day like that, you know, when that moon's peaking in the middle of the day, I'm not going to say forget completely about your typical morning and evening hunts, but you better be hunting in the middle of the day back into cover, you know? And that's one of the things that we offer on the moon guide is not only do you have your two peak activity times during the day when deer are most likely to be active, but where you need to be depending on when those times hit. Because if you got a great moon in the morning in November, those are my favorite days to be hunting. When that moon is peaking, let's say it gets light at 7 o'clock in the morning, and when that moon is peaking, say between 8:30 to 10:30 or 11, just, you know, after sunrise to 3 or 4 hours after, those have been my best days bar none for hunting in November. When it's peaking middle of the day, those are your best days to either go in early and stay just past lunch or just stay all day. You know, you're going to be sitting there all day because anything could happen in the middle of the day. And then your typical red moon evenings in November. But it really depends on what time that moon is peaking as to really where you need to be, whether it's going to be bedding areas, those transition zones, or right out on the food sources. So
would you say you're seeing more daylighting bucks in October now than November, than the early 2000s?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Would you say you're seeing more daylighting bucks or rut activity like the last week of October rather than actual November nowadays, rather than back in the early 2000s?
Actually, I always had my best luck with mature deer towards the end of November before, I mean, the end of October before the rut actually kicked in. I mean, that's, I think I killed 3 of my 4 200s in the last 10 days of October and handful of other big deer. So, I mean, that was always my favorite week. I always would pick that, excuse me, over November, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm seeing more deer, in October than November, if that was your question. Mm-hmm.
Is that more basically just, I guess, kind of regional? You know, obviously hunting further up north, you know, maybe a little bit sooner, hunting further south, maybe a little bit later. It seems like the several different farms that I've hunted around here, that like November 5th to November 9th timeframe, if you look back at all my trail camera pictures over the years, like those are the days where I have the most mature deer on their feet during daylight.
Yeah. Yeah. Right before those does come into heat, that's when the big ones are up moving. You know, it's hard to beat that, you know, November 7th window every year, you're normally going to catch big deer up and moving. But, you know, I'm normally focused on a specific buck and I feel like I've got my best chance at that deer, you know, towards the tail end of October, you know, catching them right before they really start traveling too far. You know, you get into that, you know, second week of November, they could be on a big doe, you know, 2 miles away. So.
And as far as like old eight season hunting goes, you know, obviously you're still paying attention to the moon guide and red moon and all that stuff. But are you really, to me, the red moon probably, in my opinion, I don't know, I might be incorrect when I say this, but late season food sources, the red moon might come into more effect just because they want to feed more in colder weather. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I like early and late more than November just for that fact, because I want them on a strict feeding pattern. And that's really when that moon guide shines, you know, when deer are on a strict feeding pattern, which is early season and late season. I might even actually say that I probably prefer, other than the opener or that last weekend of October, I might prefer late season even better. I mean, because they have to feed, you know, they've got to feed. When you get those cold temperatures, I mean, they're going to be up moving super early. So you normally have a longer set. It's not as confined to that window right at dusk. You know, because if it's a good red moon evening, you know, those does and fawns and yearling bucks, they're going to be up moving 2 or 3 hours before dark. So. But yeah, early and late is man, that's as good as it gets for me if you're really focusing on the food sources and the red moon.
When does bow season come in for Ohio?
I think the last 10 to 15 years, it's been the last Saturday of September when it comes in, and then it goes out the first Saturday of February.
Okay.
See, we got a long bow season.
We're the first weekend in September. You say there's like a week window where you can get one in velvet before they start shedding?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. I've seen them shed before season comes in, and then, you know, there's some that won't shed until like middle of September, 15th, 17th, sometime in there. But you've got a very narrow window where they're extremely patternable, you know, come to the food sources, but, you know, it's not a real big window there.
Yep.
Well, we are creeping up on our end time here. I think we got like 2 minutes left. Where can they find you on your socials? What's your Facebook, all that good stuff?
So I've got my own social pages on Instagram and Facebook. Moon Guide, you know, if somebody's really interested in a moon guide, the best thing for them to do is go to the website at moonguide.com. We've got a lot of information on the website. If you have any questions at all, you know, if you're interested in learning about it, feel free to email me. I answer all the emails personally at info@moonguide.com. But I mean, there's so much information on the website about it, how it works and why it works. And, you know, it's really self-explanatory, you know, when you get to the dial or the app for the moon guide, you know, because I worked with a developer creating it just to make it as easy as possible to understand, because I've had a lot of hunting apps before that are so confusing to use. There's so much information in there that you kind of get lost in it, but I think it's really user friendly. But like I said, if anybody got any questions about it, just info@moonguide.com. And I'll answer any emails, any questions about it.
Yeah. No, I have the app, but I think I need to upgrade to the premium version or whatever that might be. But no, we appreciate you coming on, and I'd like to get you on maybe at the end of November so we can recap the rut and
yeah, for sure.
Stuff, and we'll dive into a lot more and talk way longer episode, really get into things. So
hopefully we'll have some big updates by then.
That's right.
When are you planning on coming to Kentucky this year?
The opener.
Yeah. Okay, you'll be here.
I got a window that first week. I actually drew an elk tag. Me and my My nephew drew our elk tags in Wyoming this year for after 14 seasons of putting in. We finally drew, so we're going to be heading to Wyoming for elk the third week of September. But yeah, I had a little window before that to try to get something down on the ground. And one of the new guys on our show on Team 200 is from Kentucky and invited me down. I was down there scouting with him a couple of weeks ago, and he's got some big deer on camera, so we'll see what happens.
Awesome.
We appreciate it, and
yeah, good luck this season. We look forward to meeting back up with you.
Yeah, you guys too.
Thanks, Adam. Have a good one.
All right, appreciate it.
For everything high-tech hunting, connect with us on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and our YouTube channel. Thanks for joining us.